This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Mr. Dukakis apparently won't go to Washington again. Ms. Whitman wants to go to Sacramento, and the hammer goes dancing.
Left, 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 that way.
Going left for me is absolutely outrageous.
It's Wednesday and time for a Wild Thing edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for a roundup of all things political. And what a week. Somebody leaks the confidential McChrystal report to Bob Woodward. The value voters gather in Washington. One new book has a damning quote from John Edwards. Another quotes President Bush on Sarah Palin. What was she? The governor of Guam? And in a few minutes, to Albany, where New York Governor David Patterson turns a deaf ear to the White House. Later in the program, technology columnist Farhad Manjoo wonders if the golden age of Wikipedia is over. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken, and as usual, we begin with a trivia question.
Hello, Neil. By the way, that edition of Lloyd Benson, that was by a reader's demand.
I think it was probably a listener request.
A listener demand, yes. Well, that's true. But I just want to let people know that we respond to emails.
Every once in a while.
Okay, trivia question today. Former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis has been named, mentioned, as a possible Senate appointee by Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. And so the question is, name the last former governor appointed to the Senate, and also name the last person who ran for governor who was appointed to the Senate.
So if you think you know the last governor, former governor, to be appointed to the United States Senate, and the last person to run for governor to be appointed for the Senate, got to get them both.
Two answers.
Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Ken, the Massachusetts legislature did vote to give Governor Deval Patrick the power to name an interim successor to the late Senator Ted Kennedy. And reports say that the Kennedy family has made his choice.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, for the headlines for the longest time was that Michael Dukakis would, the former governor, 1988 presidential nominee, would be the choice. And now the report, and the Boston Globe gave a big editorial push for Dukakis yesterday. And today, it seems like the news is that the Kennedy family, specifically Congressman Patrick Kennedy. Congressman Patrick Kennedy and Teddy Kennedy Jr., the two sons of the late Edward Kennedy, both want that Paul Kirk, the former Democratic National Chairman, very close to the Kennedy family, worked on the Kennedy staff from 69, I guess, to 77, thereabouts, to be the appointee who would serve until the January 19th special election.
And will Governor Patrick listen to their recommendation or make his own choice?
Well, that's a question, too. There's the Harvard law professor, Charles Ogletree. There's former Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Murphy is on the list. And, you know, remember when the Kennedy family were pushing Caroline Kennedy to replace Hillary Clinton in New York, we saw David Patterson, the governor of New York, say, well, I think I want my own choice. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he picked Kirsten Gillibrand. Of course, it's different in Massachusetts when the Kennedy name is so much more magical. And it seems like they're pushing Paul Kirk.
And this, again, is for the interim appointment, primarily to vote on Senator Kennedy's most passionate issue, health care, when that comes to the Senate floor. In the meantime, though, there is going to be a Democratic primary, the real election in Massachusetts in December, and then the actual election in January. Could the person named interim governor, interim senator, run in the primary and in January?
Well, of course, there's no constitutional barrier that would keep that person from running in the special election. Of course, if it's Michael Dukakis, who's 77, if it's Paul Kirk, who's 71, it's unlikely they will serve, you know, try to run in the special election. But there is a very strong battle going on, a fierce battle in the Democratic primary December 8th. State Attorney General Martha Coakley, who is the only statewide candidate running and the only woman in running in a state that has never elected a woman to the Senate, and Congressman Michael Capuano, who basically has been criticizing Coakley for, one, how dare she announce so soon after Ted Kennedy's death, and where is she on health care and where is she on Iraq? She's saying she's too cautious to be U.S. Senator, so it's a pretty ugly battle there.
And there was a decidedly chilly handshake in New York as President Obama greeted Governor David Patterson.
Yes, it seems that the New York Times reported over the weekend that the White House and Barack, President Obama, has made it clear to Governor David Patterson that he cannot win in 2010. Of course, he became governor when his the predecessor, Elliot Spitzer, was ensnared in a prostitution scandal. David Patterson being one of two African-American governors in the country, and that's worth pointing out because, of course, Barack
the other
Obama.
One, Deval Patrick, yeah.
Right, and Barack Obama is, I think, as I recall, the first African-American president in the nation's history.
I've heard that.
So anyway, so there's pressure on David Patterson to not run. He probably, look, he's doing very poorly in the polls. Elliot Spitzer remains even more popular than Patterson. He's had a lot of missteps, David Patterson has, and there's a lot of pressure that he would bring the party down to defeat in 2010. They want Andrew Cuomo, the state attorney general, to run instead.
And we'll have more on that later. But in the meantime, over the weekend, one of those unprecedented things, President Obama, who, as you mentioned, is an African-American.
That's right, first one.
Made all of the talk shows.
Today on Face the Nation, the president is all over television this morning, including right here.
We begin with President Obama. We met in the Roosevelt Room just off the Oval Office for a spirited conversation on several topics.
I sat down with the president in the Roosevelt Room at the White House.
Mr. President, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Great to see you.
It's a genuine thrill for all of us and an honor to introduce our guest tonight. Please welcome the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama, ladies and gentlemen.
And now here for a surprise appearance on Talk of the Nation, Ken Root.
Yeah, no, it was a whirlwind event, historical in many events and in many ways. And, of course, Fox News was, I didn't hear Fox News in that montage. I guess that was done on purpose. And I don't think he made news, but obviously he's trying to reach out again, once again, to the many people and perhaps growing number of people who are concerned about his health care initiatives.
In the meantime, we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to today's trivia question, which is the last former governor to be named to be appointed to the United States Senate and the last person to run for governor of a state and then be appointed to the United States Senate. And let's get some listeners on the line. Roger, with us from Phoenix.
Hi, guys. My guess is going to be Wendell Anderson from Minnesota. He was still sitting as governor, but he self-appointed himself for Hubert Humphrey, I think, in 1976. So I'm hoping to get that on a technicality.
Well, you won't because, you know, I mean, your answer would be correct. It was 1978, actually, and he resigned, and Governor Rudy Perpich then named Wendy Anderson to the Senate seat, but he was not the last one. So it's not Wendy Anderson.
But very good.
Thanks.
Very good, Roger. Thank you. Let's go next to this is Patrick. Patrick with us from Fort Collins in Colorado.
Gentlemen, so here's the deal. I think it was Jerry Brown, who was former governor of California, who became appointed as a senator. I could be mistaken, but I do know, you know, the answer for sure for number two. I'm pretty positive.
Jerry Brown, who was first elected governor in 1974, and then it looks like he's running again in 2010. That's pretty remarkable. He did run for the U.S. Senate in 1982 against Pete Wilson.
But didn't make it.
He lost to Pete Wilson, was never appointed to the Senate.
Nice try. Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to, this will be Dan. Dan with us from Buffalo.
Hi, I also thought of Anderson and Landau from Louisiana.
Landrieu, do you mean?
Mary Landrieu did run for governor, and then she was elected to the Senate, but she was never appointed to the Senate. She won an election in 1996, but was never appointed to the Senate.
Okay, thank you.
Good try, Dan. Let's go next. This will be William. William with us from Pearson in Georgia.
Yes, I'm calling from Georgia. I think it might be Zell Miller and Johnny Isaacson.
Well, two things. First of all, we'll give you Zell Miller. Zell Miller was appointed to the seat following the death of, the Republican who died in 2000. And his name was, I'm forgetting.
There's probably more than one.
but Zell Miller was a former governor who was appointed to the U.S. Senate, but Johnny Isaacson was not appointed to the Senate. Johnny Isaacson won a Senate race on his own.
Close, but no cigar, William.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Let's see, go next to, this is Keith. Keith with us from Freeport in Illinois.
Hi. Well, Zell Miller was my guess for the first one. And I know the second one, for better or worse, is our very own Roland Burris.
You should be very proud, for not because you have Roland Burris as your senator, but because you got both answers
well,
correct.
Well, ding, 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 Keith. You win a fabulous no-prize T-shirt if you will hold on, and we'll take down your particulars, and you have to promise to send us a digital picture of you to put in our wall of shame.
All right.
Well, nice job. Thank you very much.
And it just occurred to me it was Paul Coverdale who died, and that's who Zell Miller's seat was appointed to.
All right. Let's see if we can go back to actual results. A mayoral race last Tuesday in Boston.
Yesterday, right? Thomas Menino, the longest-serving mayor in Boston history. They have an interesting election in Boston. It's nonpartisan, even though everybody's a Democrat. but they all run on the same ballot, and then the top two contenders go on to a November 3rd runoff. Thomas Menino, who's been elected seeking an unprecedented fifth term, got over 50% of the vote. City Councilor Michael Flaherty, who's saying it's time for a change. He finished second. The two of them will go into a November 3rd runoff.
And the Value Voters Summit here in Washington, D.C., we saw both Mike Huckabee and Tim Pawlenty here in town to speak, and there was a straw poll, and who won?
Well, it was a very influential straw poll. Over 597 people voted.
Oh, well.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Mike Huckabee won with 29%, and a bunch of candidates were Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, Sarah Palin, Mike Pence, the congressman from Indiana, all finished in second place with about 12% each. Tim Pawlenty this week, by the way, just started a new PAC, a Freedom First Political Action Committee, obviously prefacing a potential 2012 run for the presidency.
And while the appointment, when it comes down, and I understand in Massachusetts, there is a 90-day waiting period unless the governor declares an emergency, which I guess the governor is expected to do in this case. So we should have an appointment of an interim senator soon. That would give, of course, the Democrats the 60 votes they need to vote cloture and put down Republican filibusters on the health care bill. However, sad news from West Virginia, where Robert Byrd is back in the hospital.
Well, yes, don't get people panicking. Nothing has happened yet. Of course, yesterday he stood up, Senator Byrd, who's 91 years old, the longest-serving senator in history, stood up at his home and fell down. They brought him to the hospital just in case. There were no broken bones, no bruises or anything, but they're keeping him in the hospital for a possible infection.
All right, so we'll keep our eyes on Senator Byrd and hope that everything goes well for him. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. Up next, New Yorkers have more to talk about than just that Yankees game. How about the governor? The White House reportedly wants him to bow out. Should he? If you're in New York, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If it's Wednesday, it must be the political junkie, Ken Rudin, NPR political editor, with us as always. On Monday, President Obama traveled to Troy, New York, on the tarmac at the Albany International Airport. He was greeted by New York Governor David Paterson, a man whose popularity is not high amongst New Yorkers, and the White House. According to several news organizations, the White House political director met with Governor Paterson to encourage him not to run for governor in 2010. The governor says he has every intention of staying in the race. So New Yorkers, should Governor Paterson listen to the White House and bow out? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And joining us now from our bureau in New York City is Irene J. Liu, a political reporter for the Albany Times-Union. And it's nice to have you back with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks so much. So
you've escaped downstate for the day.
I did indeed.
Now, you were on the tarmac as the pool reporter when President Obama came to upstate New York. And, well, what was that like?
It was great. I actually wasn't on the tarmac. I was there to cover when he did a class walkthrough, and he spoke with students, and it was great. You know, he has a very easy way with people, and so it was pretty interesting to see him in action.
Well, did he have an easy way with Governor Paterson?
Well, that's another question. I mean, you know, personally, from the perspective of an Albany reporter, we were really excited because this is he's coming up, he's highlighting something that we're really proud of in terms of our community colleges. And then, of course, 2 days before, he steps on his own message by having this story leak out. And so, you imagine if you have two people who break up very publicly, and the last thing you want to do is be on national television with a bunch of cameras snapping photos, looking at every movement right after. Really what you want to do is you want to stay home and eat ice cream, right? So
in the meantime, the governor has said, whatever the White House may have said, I'm not listening to them.
Right. I mean, and I think that a lot of people recognize that this is certainly, you know, his numbers are very, very, I mean, he hasn't been able to pull them up for 4 months. His numbers have hovered around 20%, according to a Marist poll that came out last week. And for what, you know, no matter how hard he's been trying to sort of refocus his agenda and refocus his campaign, he hasn't been able to pull up those numbers. And so as a result, a number of people from all the way to the top of the party down are very concerned because while, you know, because of, you know, sort of the Obama election in 2008, the Democrats really started to take – they took control of pretty much every statewide seat, all but three congressional seats, and control both parts of the legislature. And so –
sometimes.
You know, well, sometimes, yes, when they're not fighting and not
bickering amongst
doing any work.
Yes.
Exactly. And so it's – next year is a very, very important year for New York, especially because – redistricting is going to come up. And really what this means is if the Democrats can keep control of both the Senate and the Assembly next year, they essentially New York will officially become a blue state. I mean, they'll redistrict the congressional districts and everything else to favor the Democrats. And so that's why it's such a crucial year. And the governor is – everyone is very, very concerned now. But, you know, having this come out so early, which according to people that I've talked to, was not the timing of the White House. This really came out from other camps, puts Governor Patterson in a difficult position. He has one more budget that he needs to deal with next year. And, of course, as with many other states, a very, very serious budget deficit. You know, they just had a leaders meeting this morning. To talk about the estimated $2.1 billion budget deficit in this year's budget alone, not talking about next year. So, you know, he has a lot of governing left to do. And so this certainly puts him in a tough spot. If he were to say, oh, you know what, maybe I won't run, then that essentially makes him lame duck and will make it that much harder for them to do the work that needs to be done.
Ken?
Irene, it was interesting to me that the first thing that President Obama said when he arrived in Troy was to say, I noticed that Governor David Patterson is here. And the next thing he said, I also noticed that Andrew Cuomo is here, the state attorney general. Cuomo has done nothing overtly or even covertly to run for governor, and yet everybody expects he's going to do it.
I mean, it's sort of been this very open secret that he has harbored ambitions for governor. Certainly he ran in 2000, and it is something that he's wanted to do. Oh, I'm sorry, 2002. I apologize. And he did not win the primary against Carl McCall at the time. He's harbored ambitions. You know, at that point, he sort of left, went to Washington for a while, came back, and has seen his political capital soar. And really, at this point, I mean, he's doing what he needs to do, which is to not say anything and just keep on going, keep on doing his job, and just wait for the party to come knocking on his door.
One thing I did notice that, of course, when you talk about the 2002 primary and Carl McCall was African-American. David Patterson is African-American. Charlie Rangel has made the point that black voters are not going to look kindly on Andrew Cuomo if he does take on David Patterson.
Well, I think that that's why you see him, I mean, not really campaigning, not making a point to even put himself out there so much. I mean, really, all he's mastered the art of sort of letting everyone come to him. And I think it is an issue. But at the same time, right now, Governor Patterson really doesn't have very much support overall. But he also doesn't have very much support in the black community. According to numerous polls for the past few months, I mean, black voters support Cuomo running for governor next year more so than they even support Governor Patterson.
Well, let's get some listeners in on the conversation. We'll go to John. John calling us from Bloomfield, New York.
Yeah, I told your screener, I'm on a fixed income. I'm retired. And with the taxes and fees that man has put on, and a lot of them are just upstate, not downstate, he couldn't get elected dog catcher in an apartment building that only allowed cats. So it really doesn't much matter whether he runs or not. He's not going anywhere.
All right, John, thanks very much for that terse political analysis there. Let's see if we go to Justin. Justin calling from Long Island.
How you doing, Neil?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Great. Governor Patterson basically, as I'm sure you all know, has an approval rating of 20. I would support you for governor of New York before I would support Governor Patterson.
I'd have to relocate, Justin.
Damn praise just, indeed.
Yes.
He's just consistently, when leadership is needed, it's not there. I don't think he was ever meant to be governor. He was supposed to be in Spitzer's shadow, and, of course, Spitzer resigned in disgrace. And I think you guys were talking about earlier, people support Spitzer coming back. over Patterson. I would vote for Andrew Cuomo. I would vote for H. Carl McCall if someone could convince him to run again. I would basically vote for anyone before I reelected the sitting Governor Patterson.
And you could imagine the television picture as I was looking at Ken to tell him to keep his mouth shut as he started to think of jokes about Governor Spitzer coming back. Anyway, Justin, thanks very much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's see, we go next to Kate, and Kate's with us from Patchogue, also in New York.
Hi. I think Governor Patterson should run. I think it's unfair for the Democratic Party to decide for the people who is going to bow out or not. I think that's unfair, and I think he should be able to run.
Even if that means, are you a Democrat, Kate?
I am a Democrat, yes.
So even if that means a Republican wins the next race?
Well, should that matter? Should we automatically say, I choose party over person?
Well, I guess...
Is that really fair?
I guess that's the question that people are being asked.
Well, I personally think no. I think we should be able to choose person over party, and I don't think it's fair of the Democratic Party to step in and say, we want to assure a place in New York State, and therefore you have to bow out because you're not sure to win.
All right, Kate, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And I guess that mirrors opinion in the state. And Ken, I think this matters also because the Democrats in New York State are worried about a strong Republican candidate in next year.
Right. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, who still remains very popular. As a matter of fact, a poll shows he's more popular among Republicans than Michael Bloomberg, who's looks like he's going to win a third term this year. But I suspect that part of Giuliani's popularity is based against David Patterson, that if Andrew Cuomo were the Democratic nominee, one, Giuliani's numbers wouldn't be as strong, and two, I suspect that Giuliani might not even run.
And we have to go back to our guest, Irene J. Liu, and point out that the beleaguered Governor Patterson did have one important victory this week. He's got a lieutenant governor now.
He does, and against all odds, really. The lower courts had ruled against him, but yet now New York State has lieutenant governor. There is a succession.
Let's see. Richard Ravitch, the former head of the MTA. Let's see if we can go next to Tara. Tara with us from Utica, New York.
Hi. I think that Patterson should be out. My husband is a corrections officer, and he is really messing up the corrections department. He's cutting jobs where there should not be jobs cut. He's putting people's lives in danger because there's not going to be enough corrections officers to cover the amount of inmates that they've got. They went to Albany to protest what he wants to do, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with them and doesn't even want to listen to what they have to say.
So the he didn't have an open door and didn't even want to hear from a delegation?
No.
All right.
And
well,
I'm afraid for the security of the corrections officers. He's making cuts that are not necessary in an area that really needs all the people that they can get.
Well, the state budget is in terrible shape. He's got to make cuts somewhere.
Yeah, well, I don't think it should be putting people in danger when he does.
Tara, thanks very much for the call. We hope everything works out okay for your husband.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller in. And this is Dave. Dave with us from Memphis in New York. Where's Memphis?
Memphis is in Onondaga County, west of Syracuse.
Okay. I've spent a fair amount of time in Onondaga County, but I've never been to Memphis.
Well, it's there. It's an old canal stop on the Erie Canal.
Okay. Well, what do you think?
I think he ought to step aside. I mean, if he's a team player with the Democratic Party, he ought to let somebody else get in there that can actually win. But I should warn the Democrats that, if they can't get anything done, despite the fact that they have the governorship and the Senate and the Assembly, they better get some stuff done out there in Albany.
All right, Dave, thanks very much. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
And there's another kind of primary, Irene J. Liu, and that is, of course, money raising. How much money has Governor Patterson been able to assemble for a primary and then a general election, which will not be cheap in the state of New York?
Oh, yes, and especially with the New York City market, TV time is incredibly expensive, and so money is what you need for a statewide race. At this point right now, Andrew Cuomo, in his position as attorney general, has raised 2-1 over Governor David Patterson. There were reports that over the weekend after these announcements came out that he was trying to rally the troops. Governor Patterson was trying to rally the troops to try to close that gap. It's a very tough time. On the other hand, at the moment, he still does have one more round of budgeting. And, as a key player in both the budget as well as all the state contracts, he will be able to raise money. He is still governor. Attorney General Andrew Cuomo has been going gangbusters in terms of trying to raise money. He's had lots of, you know, thousand plate fundraisers, and he has a very, very, very strong campaign operation going right now. So it is going to be very tough for Governor Patterson right now to try to close the gap.
Irene J. Liu, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Irene J. Liu is a political reporter for the Albany Times-Union and a blogger called Capital Confidential at thetimesunion.com, and she joined us today from our bureau in New York. Ken Rudin is here, the political junkie. You can read his column and listen to his podcast, as if this wasn't enough, at npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And, Ken, there's a few more items of news that we really wanted to catch up on. One, the former head of eBay, Meg Whitman, has formally now declared, no surprise, that she wants to run for the Republican nomination for governor in California.
She would be she's the first-time candidate. And, of course, women have tried to be elected governor of California, Dianne Feinstein, Kathleen Brown, but have failed. But she's the kind of person I think Republicans are looking for, less ideological, more business-oriented. And she could have a shot, especially if the primary in California gets nasty on the Democratic side.
And how many people would be on her side? She's got some competition.
She does. She has a state treasurer who's also a multimillionaire who's more conservative. Seems like whatever influence Arnold Schwarzenegger and the so-called moderate Republicans have left, I would think they would be behind a Whitman candidacy.
Earlier, we made a passing reference to the book by the former George W. Bush staffer, mentioning, among other things, asking the question of Sarah Palin, what is she, the governor of Guam? And mentioning that the then-candidate Obama was clueless and some harsh words for a lot of people. But, in fact, there is another book coming out that has absolutely terrible things to say about the former presidential candidate on the Democratic side, John Edwards.
Well, John Edwards has not had a stroke, a good time of it lately on the news. And of course, the announcement for Riel Edwards, his campaign videographer, who basically the word is out there that John Edwards may be days or weeks away from confessing that he is the father of her child.
After denying that up and down.
And on that famous tell-all interview on ABC's Nightline where he told everything. Well, of course, he denied that, and that could be bad. And plus the fact that there's a federal investigation going whether to see if he spent campaign contributions to either hush up the affair or try to buy off Riel Hunter regarding the child. So there's a lot of bad things going on over the head of John Edwards. You know, somebody who had such a limitless future, I thought, is certainly...
Well, and the damning quote that he told his paramour that after his wife died, he would marry her.
There are so many wincing comments that have come out on this story. The fact that, first of all, politically, the fact that he was still running for president or trying to be vice president on an Obama ticket, if that had come out in October, the Democrats would have been sunk.
Also, Jenny Sanford, the wronged woman in South Carolina, she's inked a deal for a book. Who knows what will come out with that? But really, the story of the week had to be the appearance on Dancing with the Stars. Tom DeLay, the Hammer, and let's listen to a little bit of what he had to say about that.
One thing I wasn't prepared for in learning to dance is getting in touch with my feminine side. So my biggest fear is that I might embarrass myself.
I feel like a complete goose.
Well, did you catch the act?
I did, and it was also another wincing thing. I mean, I do remember watching Richard Nixon play the piano on the Jack Parr show. This is somehow different. The thought of Tom DeLay, and as the early clip said, moving to your left, to your left, to your left, which is so unlike Tom DeLay, it was pretty remarkable stuff. It makes me wish for the good old days of Rod Blagojevich.
Oh, yeah, when politicians had dignity.
Exactly.
Exactly. And finally, Ken, I guess we have to think about, there was actually somebody who had was even less thrilled with Tom DeLay's performance than Tom DeLay. Somebody actually got fewer votes than Tom DeLay did.
Who's that?
The former Dallas Cowboys wide receiver. Oh, you didn't know this?
No.
Well, you'll have to figure that out on your own. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us today.
This day in history, Richard Nixon, the Checkers speech.
Ah!
On this day.
The Republican cloth coat.
I get chest pains when I think of it. Thank you.
All right. The great moment in history. Thank you very much. Ken Rudin is our NPR's political editor, joins us every Wednesday as the political junkie right here on Talk of the Nation. And again, you can read his blog and listen to his podcast at npr.org. Coming up, is it the end of Wikipedia? We'll talk with Farhad Manju about the future of crowdsourcing and why Wikipedians are like a field of bunnies. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.